Okay, so I hope everyone got the outline. I put it on the WhatsApp group. Anyone not get it? Okay, good. Okay, so... Yeah, so I hate to be the sixth grade teacher that none of us like, who always says at the beginning of class, like, we have a lot to do, very little time. but I feel like in this situation, it needs to be said. Yeah, so it's just like a pretty big sugya. And we're going to try and like kind of get through the whole thing, or at least everything we've done so far. And yeah, so it might take a little bit longer. Hopefully going to try and finish, you know, before Glock Mincha. If we don't, then I guess we'll just, you know, save whatever we don't get to for either I'll make it up on another day, or Josh will pick it up with an exazar here. And we're going to try and move like a little bit quickly to like get in all the points, but I will, I'll try and be as clear as possible, with that being the case. Okay. So the first thing is, the Gemara in Gittin, Ayin Aleph. So we're going to start there because after all, we are learning, Seches Gittin. So I guess it'd be fitting to read a Gemara in Gittin. So the Gemara in Gittin, Ayin Aleph, begins with, a quote from Rav Kana Amar Rav, who tells us that Chiri Sheyachol Adavar Mitoch HaKsav Kosa Minos and Get Liishto. So basically, Rav is Machadish that.
Just make sure.
So basically, Rav is Machadish that if one is a deaf mute, so they're able to do a tzivoy for a get to be written for his wife. And the Gemara continues later about 10, 11 lines down. Rav Zera, Ikashali, Hakashali. So he asks Akasha on Rav. And he says, Tanya Imlo Yagid, Prale Ilim. So the Pesukim when talking about Eidos, stress Haggadah. And that, the Braisa tells us, excludes an Ilim from testifying. Shani Yachal Hagid, because he's not able to be Magid to testify. But then the Gemara says, Amai, why should an Ilim be Pelsa from testifying? Hayachal Hagid, Mitoch Haksav. According to Rav, even if someone's a deaf mute, can they just, you know, communicate via writing that they want something to happen? So why can't an Elam also testify through his writing? So response to the Gemara, Amar Le Abaye, Eidos Kamrus, Shiny Eidos, Rachman Amri Pien, Velomi Piksavam. Ah, famous words. So Abaye responds that that's not a good comparison, because Tzivoy HaBaal to write Gerushin, that could be done via Ksiva. But when it comes to Eidos, we have a special Gzeres HaKasuv, where the Pasuk says, Mipien v'lo mipiksavam, quoting from the Pasuk in Shoftim, it actually comes up a couple of times, so it's not 100% clear which one the Gemara is referring to, but both of them say, Al Pishnaim Eidim, or Al Pishnei Eidim. So both of them emphasize Piv. So we learn from there, Mipien v'lo mipiksavam. And the example in the Gemara here is basically just that an Elaim cannot testify. Just to talk a little bit about some opening questions for this din of Mipien v'lo mipiksavam, what we're going to talk about. So I just want to talk about like four framing questions, which I think kind of outline everything that we spoke about more or less. So the first question is, what exactly is the issue of Mipien v'lo mipiksavam? So that's like a multifaceted question. So number one, like what are the simple applications of Mipien in the Gemara? One is the Gemara in Gittin, and then another one we're going to see in Yevamos. And also part of that is, like, what actually is the issue in Mipien v'lo mipiksavam? As we just noted, the Gemara in Gittin only mentions the issue for an Elam to testify via writing, via his Ksav Yad, but can it also apply to Ksav Yad in general, to anybody? Second question is, assuming Mipien is more limited, and written Eidos in general can be effective, again, except for cases maybe like Elaim or other exceptions, but in general, Eidos Piksav would work. One could write their Eidos and send it to Beis Din. So assuming that would be the case, so is that just because that written Eidos that you send to Beis Din works as a shtar? Or is it because we've created this new category called Eidos Piksav, which is effective, and what are the nafkaminas of that question? Okay, third framing question is that if Mipien is really so broad, right, the other side of that question, of that machlokas, if Mipien is really broad and it prevents basically all usages of written Eidos, so very basic question, how can a shtar ever work? Because after all, isn't shtar just kind of like a glorified form of written edus? Yeah, and then question number four, the final question, based off all this analysis, so what do we see from the discussion of EPM? What do we see from that when it comes to the question of shtar more generally, how shtar works? Like, what do we learn from EPM, which could teach us about shtar in general, completely outside of the sugya, which will obviously be very helpful going forward in Maseches Gittin to understand many details when it comes to get. Okay. So in terms of the first question, so like what actually is the issue of EPM? So first, just the cases. So there are two cases that we saw that come up in Shas of EPM. So the first case we mentioned is the Gemara in Gittin, Ayin Aleph. That specifically is referring to the method of giving over testimony, giving over the Eidos. And we'll see soon that application might be severely limited to an Elam or something like that. But the key is that Gemara in Gittin is referring to the method of testimony by which the Eidim give over their Eidos to Beis Din. That needs to be verbally. There are some limitations of doing it through writing. And then you have the second application, which is the Gemara in Yevamos, Aslam al Alfa Mibiz, which is talking about the question of why we didn't institute Shtar Kedushin to have Zman written on it. And the Gemara basically at a certain point says, it has like a couple of pshatim there, but one of the pshatim is that a Shtar Kedushin doesn't have Zman instituted for it because it would kind of be pointless. Because if you have the Shtar Kedushin in the hands of the man or the woman, they might just erase the Zman and change it. And here's the key part. If you leave the Shtar Kedushin in the hands of the Eidim, so then we're concerned that the Eidim are going to forget their entire testimony, and then they're going to go to Beis Din and testify based off of what they see in the Shtar. And that, the Gemara says, would be a violation of Mipiem of Lomi Piksava. Now, this application of Mipiem of Lomi Piksava is very different than the application in Gittin, right? Because as we just noted, the Gemara in Gittin's application is a limitation on the method of the Eidos to Beis Din, while the Gemara in Yevamos is more focused on like the source of the Eid's knowledge. That if an Eid forgets everything, that's a problem, and he can't just like look at the writing, at the shtar in that case, and just testify based off that. The source of his knowledge is not his own; it's coming from the shtar. Okay, so those are the two cases in the Gemara. And now moving on from the cases in the Gemara. So now the question, which becomes a little bit more fundamental, and that is like, what actually is the issue of Mipiem Velo Mipik Sava? Specifically, the application of the Gemara in Gittin that's referring to the method of Eidos. So it seems that on a simple level, everyone agrees with the application of Gemara in Yevamos that there is some issue to testify in Beis Din based off of, like, if you forget everything, it's machlokes in the Gemara there, but according to the Tana, who thinks that there would be, according to the Tana, who thinks you need to remember something, it seems like everyone agrees that there's an issue of Mipiem if you totally forget everything and you just quote, and you just use the Shtar as your source of knowledge for the Eidos. But when it comes to the Gemara in Gittin, it's a lot more controversial. The Gemara in Gittin, again, is referring to the method by which you give Eidos over. And the question there is that limited to the Gemara's case, where the Gemara says that an Elam, someone who's mute, cannot testify via his writing, or does that possible written Eidos in general? For anybody, a good kosher person with complete das and no deficiencies when it comes to speaking, could they basically just send a deposition from their house to Beis Din? So here we have the massive machlokas Rishonim, Rashi ala Torah, and seemingly the Rambam versus Rabbeinu Tam. The way he's quoted differently in the Balei HaTosfos and in the Mordechai, which we'll get to in a second. So first, the Shita of Rashi ala Torah and the Rambam. So the Shita of Rashi ala Torah, when the Torah says in Parsha Shoftim, Al Pishnayim Eidim, so Rashi quotes the Joshua Mipiem Velo Mipik Savam, and Rashi says this blanket rule that Eidim are never allowed to send written Eidus to Beis Din. He also adds in there that you're not able to use a Maturgam on a translator. But the basic issue being that for Rashi, you are not allowed to send written Eidus to Beis Din whatsoever. The Rambam, we're not going to discuss the Rambam right now at length, we're going to get to it soon, but the Rambam clearly does take that assumption like Rashi al Torah as well, because the Rambam is very bothered by how shtar, the Rambam Hilchos Eidos, Perakim al Lachadalid, so the Rambam is very bothered by how the concept of shtar can ever work. After all, written Eidos never works. So it's clear the Rambam takes Rashi al Torah's assumption, and he just takes it a step further, a massive step further, that all written Eidos is a problem. And on the flip side, the second Shita, we have Rabbeinu Tam, as he's quoted in the Balei HaTosfos, Tosos in the Gemara in Ksubis and Baba Basra and the Gemara in Yevamos, that that Rabbeinu Tam, as he's quoted there, although it's pointed out that apparently in one of them he doesn't quote Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, in Ksubis he doesn't quote Rabbeinu Tam by name, but it seems like he's referring to Ishita. Three, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it seems a parallel to Rabbeinu Tam, she does. It's quoted in the other Balei HaTosfos. And Rabbeinu Tam, as he's quoted there, says that Mipik Savam only passels written Eidos when it comes to an Elaim. And the way he's quoted mostly is because an Elaim is not Roy Lahagid, but somebody who is not an Elaim, who has the capacity to speak in general, is Roy Lahagid. And if you are theoretically Roy Lahagid, you theoretically could speak in Besdin. So that allows you to use written Eidos as well, and to basically send in a deposition, Eidos Piksav, to Besdin. Okay, so that is the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam as he's quoted in the Balei HaTosfos. Then, thirdly, we have the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam as he is quoted by the Mordechai. So, the Mordechai comes up in Maseches Yevamos, and the Mordechai basically says, he says that there's two dinim. One is Rabbeinu Tam, as we just mentioned, in the Balei HaTosfos, that there's a problem for an Elaim to send in written Eidos ever. But a second din, says the Mordechai, even if you are someone who is generally verbal and therefore should have the ability to use written Eidos and send it to Besdin, says the Mordechai, when it comes to Dinei Nefashos, that is unacceptable. That's only true when it comes to Dinei Mamonos, but when it comes to Dinei Nefashos, you can never use written Eidos. And the obvious question, just to speak about that very quickly, the Shita of the Mordechai, this third Shita, is why? Why exactly would it be a problem specifically to use written Eidos in the context of Dinei Nefashos, not Dinei Mamonos? So to that, we gave two potential pshatim. So one pshat, said very simply, is that when it comes to Dinei Nefashos, of course, we want to be more cautious because the potential outcome is obviously very concerning, that someone's going to get killed potentially as a result of a psak din, Dinei Nefashos. So just because in general, like, the stakes are higher when it comes to Dinei Nefashos, so we want to be more careful, and therefore we want to basically disallow written Eidos all the time, maybe because written Eidos in general, even though it might work, might be effective in Dinei Mamonos, it still is like a little bit murky because, you know, like the aid might not have as much fear of the context of Bez Din, being in front of the Baal Din. So therefore, like, it's not necessarily the best form of Eidos, so we draw the line in Dinei Mamonos there, and Dinei Nefashos there. And we say in Dinei Nefashos that you cannot use written Eidos whatsoever. So that's one potential pshat. And Rashi and Makos seems to say something like that in general when it comes to the chilek between Dinei Nefashos and Dinei Mamonos, that the Gemara basically has a shita that says that the din of Batla Maksasa, Batla Kulon, is only going to be true when it comes to Nefashos, and not by Mamonos, that if one Eid is possible, the whole group is possible. So the Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah there in Makos seems to say that that's only true in Dinei Nefashos, and Rashi explains, yeah, because basically in Dinei Nefashos, we want to make sure that we do what we can to, like, cancel the group of Eidim, basically. So therefore, Batla Maksasa, Batla Kula, will say that the whole group is out, because in Dinei Nefashos, we want to be careful, so we'll basically be more lax in, like, canceling out all the Eidos. So that's one potential pshat in the Mordechai as to why written Eidos is dafka problem Dinei Nefashos. And then there's a second pshat that Rav Zweig offered, which is the following. When it comes to the nature of the Eidos of Dinei Nefashos and Dinei Mamonos in general, so there seems to be a lot of evidence that Dinei Nefashos specifically requires a more formal, what we refer to as a kas of Eidim. And as the Rav accentuated, kas, he didn't say kas Eidim, that was Rav Zweig's language, but the Rav would point out that it should be Eidos on a Maisa. So the point being that you need to have a group of Eidim al HaMaisa. That is what we see when it comes to the chilek between Dinei Nefashos and Dinei Mamonos more generally. So we see that based off the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Eidos, Perek Dalet, in the beginning of Perek Dalet, seems to tell us that Eidos Miuchedes, which is where, you know, you have one Eid saying that something happened, a guy lent money on Sunday, and then another Eid comes along and says, I saw him lend money on Monday, and it's the same amount of money, that's Eidos Miuchedes. So the Rambam says that you can join together those two Eidim when it comes to Dinei Mamonos. When it comes to Dinei Nefashos, we have much stricter guidelines as to how we can combine Eidim. So strict that even if Eidim saw the same thing from different vantage points, from different windows, and they didn't necessarily see each other, that would actually not work to be mitzarif them. So we have much stricter guidelines when it comes to Dinei Nefashos. So why would that be? So we explained that because when it comes to Din Nefashos, you need to actually have a unit of Edim, a kas of Edim, alamaisa. And therefore, there are very strict guidelines where they literally mamish need to see the same exact thing together. And then, similarly, we brought that up in Tosos and Makos. When it comes to his explanation of Edah Shabbat L'Maksasa Bat L'Kula, in contrast to Rashi, who we mentioned before, it just says that on a very simple level, Dine Nefashos, we want to be more careful. Tosos explains the Chilak in a little bit of a more fundamental way, which relates to this idea, but I don't want to get into it so much now, because it's going to take a little bit of time, and I think that the idea is clear without it. But the point being, tying it back to the question of the Mordechai, yeah. Yeah, so someone asked me about that. I've been thinking about it. I think it's an extension because I think that, or I don't know what his intention was, if it was an extension or a different idea, but I think it makes a lot of sense that they go hand in hand. Because like I feel like if you're emphasizing Eidus on the Maisa, so in contrast to like in Dina Mamunus, where it's kind of like Eidus on the Chov, I feel like the emphasis is kind of the fact that like we're trying to like give over this Maisa via the Eidim, like to the Dayanim. So it's like you're giving over like the experience, like what you experience at the Maisa to the Dayanim. So it makes sense that like you have to have the same exact experience, a kas, as opposed to Mamunus, where it's just about a chob, it's just like a factual question, like on the books, like does this guy owe money or not? So therefore, I think it makes sense to separate between that. But I don't know which one he intended, but I see them kind of going hand in hand, or that they work well together. Like, but I hear also if you want to distinguish. Okay, so just tying back that distinction to the Mordechai. So we see that Dine Nefashos needs to have a kas of Edim, a unit of Edim. And therefore, Memela, we're going to say that written Edos is never effective if it's sent, obviously, by multiple different Edim. Because when it comes to Dine Nefashos, you need a kas of Edim. They need to be a unit. And therefore, by definition, written Edos can never be considered a unit. You need to be a unit testifying together. And it's impossible to be a unit when all you have is just your words on a piece of paper. Okay. So that is as far as the basic shitos. Again, we have Rashi al Torah, grouped together with the Rambam, that written Eidos never works. We have the shita of Rabbeinu Thomas, quoting the Balei HaTosfos, that written Eidos always works, except for an Elam. And then we have the shita of the Mordechai, who adds to Rabbeinu Tam and says that written Eidos generally works, just now when it comes to an Elam, and also what he adds, now when it comes to Dine Nefashos, and we gave a couple explanations as to why that would be. Okay, so now moving on to trying to understand Shitas Rabbeinu Tam a little bit more deeply. So Shitas Rabbeinu Tam, as quoted in the Balei HaTosfos. So the big question Shitas Rabbeinu Tam is, when he says that aside from Elam, written Eidos always works, does that work because he basically just allows you to send in written Eidos like as its own category? Meaning, we in general have something called shtar, and then we're mechadish basically from Rabbeinu Tam this new category called edus b'ksav. Or does it work just because he thinks that edus b'ksav works as a shtar? Meaning, they're always the same thing, and that's what Rav Zweig always referred to as like two categories versus three categories. Like, do we separate shtar and edus b'ksav into different categories, and then third category is edus bal peh? So those two categories. The first two categories, like, are they really two categories of Eidus, B'Ksav, and Shtar, or are they the same category, aka just Shtar? Or Eidus, B'Ksav, I guess, whatever you want to say. It's probably Shtar, because, like, throughout Shas, it's referred to as Shtar. What? Right, that's true, I guess, yeah. Yeah. But it's still called Shtar in, like, the Gemaras. Yeah, okay. So where do we see some evidence to this question within Shitas Rabbeinu Tam? So I think there are four primary nafkaminas that we pointed to when it came to going through the Tosasim as they quote the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam. So the first nafkamina I think that comes up is when Rabbeinu Tam allows you to send in your Eidus B'Ksav, your written Eidus, do the Edim need to remember their Eidos or not? Could you just send it in? Because coming back to this question, if you think that Rabbeinu Tam allows written Eidos to be sent in because it works midin shtar, so then obviously not. Obviously, the whole point of shtar, I shouldn't say the whole point, but I think it's pretty obvious that if you're writing up a shtar and you give it to them, you give it to the Dayanim, so we don't really care about these Edim. Of course, also these Edim could be dead, they could be gone. These Edim, of course, don't need to remember anything. But if we say that Edus B'Ksav being sent in kind of works as its own category separate from Shtar, so then it's at least an open question, right? It might be that you do require them to remember because this new category is working similar to classic Edus where there should be a sense of memory, but also maybe not. Maybe even in this new category of Edus B'Ksav, you do not need to remember it. So just some shitas to pin that down within the Tosafim. So Tosafos and Ksubas and Tosafos and Yivamos seem to be explicit about the fact that you do indeed need to remember Edus B'Ksav. So it's clear for those Balei Tosafos that Edus B'Ksav, according to Aminu Tam, is not working Midin Shtar. If it was, you certainly would not need to remember it. So if you need to remember it, it has to be working as a separate category. The other side of that is Tosafos and Baba Basra. He gives a couple of pshatim, but in his first pshat, for sure, he seems to say that if you are sending in Edus B'Ksav, you actually do not need to remember your Edus. But again, it's an open question if that proves anything, right? Because that could be true because it works as Shtar, therefore, of course, you don't need to remember it. Or that could just be true because this new category of Edus B'Ksav does not need to, they don't need to remember the Edus when they are sending it in. And then, I don't want to get into it so much, but the next sheet on Tosafos there is kind of open to interpretation. On the surface, he sounds like you probably, it sounds like he probably argues on the first day and thinks that you, when you send an Edus B'Ksav, you do need to remember it, but it's not 100% clear if that's pshat there. I don't want to get into it so much, but I just want to say that for this issue, the second Danatosos is open to interpretation. Anyone to talk about it after, we can talk about it, because it's like very involved in the reading. Is that what you're going to ask about? Okay. Okay, so that's one nafkamina when it comes to remembering your Edus, when you send Edus B'Ksav. Okay. A second nafkamina is Eid Echad. When the Edim are sending in this deposition, this Edus B'Ksav, from their house, so let's say you just have one Eid sending it in. So do we say right away that that doesn't register because it's only Eid Echad? Or do we say that it's fine, it works, and the second that we get another Edus B'Ksav from someone else, we could be mitzdarif them? So again, this goes back to the question. If we say that Edus B'Ksav is working Midin Shtar, so then, seemingly, when it comes to Eid Echad, that would be a problem because we know, or it's likely, as Tosafos points out, that there is a requirement of Beis Edim when it comes to writing a shtar. So therefore, if it's working within shtar, so then Eid Echad would probably be an issue. As opposed to if you say that it works as its own category, then it's harder to say. I wouldn't even say it's like such an open question. It's pretty likely that Eid Echad would not be an issue if Edus B'Ksav works as its own category. So just, again, some sheet doors to pin this down. So we have Tosafos and Ksubas, who seems to say explicitly that Eid Echad works, seemingly showing that Edus B'Ksav works different than Shtar. But the way of Rosenzweig was reading that second day on Tosafos and Baba Basra, it seems to be that Edus B'Ksav does have a requirement of Beis Edim, and it would run into the issue of Eid Echad. And therefore, it seems from that sheet, again, this goes back to my point that shita is a little bit open to interpretation, but a straight way to read it is that Eid Echad is an issue if we say that Edus B'Ksav is going to work like Shtar, because Shtar requires Beis Edim. Okay, but I just want to point out, but there's another way to read that. Yeah.
Wasn't that also just multiple answers in Tosafos and Ksubas?
Multiple answers?
Yeah, I mean, Tosafos and Ksubas gave like three possibilities as to what Shtar is, whether it's Shnei Edim or if it's...
Did I say the two deyas in Tosafos and Ksubas? I meant Tosafos and Baba Basra, if that's...
No, I'm saying in Tosafos and Ksubas, there are like three different answers as to what Ashvi Ashtara is, whether...
Right, but I don't know if they're arguing on that point, meaning, oh, if you need Eid Echad and Shtar in general.
Yeah,
correct, yeah. But within the first day, who thinks you need Eid Echad and Shtar, so he Dafka points out that when it comes to Edus B'Ksav, you don't need it, because it doesn't work within Shtar. The other answers, I guess, you just wouldn't know. Okay. Is there someone? Is that question or half stretch? Okay, nice. Okay. Okay, so that's the second nafkamina. A third nafkamina of this question in Rabbeinu Tam about Edus B'Ksav is what happens if Edim essentially just show up to Beis Din and they just like quote Edus B'Ksav. So Tosafos and Yivamos starts out by saying explicitly that when it comes to Shtar in general, Edim have a right to quote a Shtar because he invokes Reish Lakish, who says Nasa Kamisha Nechgru Edusan B'Beis Din. That basically every shtar is as if it's a chiddush of Tosafos, but he assumes that every shtar is as if it's fully accepted in Beis Din already, so it's totally fine to quote a classic shtar because you're basically just quoting a psak din that already occurred. Does the same thing apply to quoting Eidos B'Ksav? So again, if it's working Midin Shtar, so then according to that presentation of Tosfos, you would think that you can quote Eidos B'Ksav as working Midin Shtar. If it's not working Midin Shtar, then it's likely that you probably would not be able to quote it, because where'd you get it from that Eidos B'Ksav, this separate new category, is considered like Nechbar Yidus HaMebezdin, and that it's already Apsakt in. We don't have precedent for that, so it'd be hard to say that you could just stam quote it. Again, Shitos on this, so Tosos and Yavamos, again, is the one who says you can quote a Shtar in general, but as Tosos goes on, again, he has a couple deos there, but at least in one of the deos, he seems pretty explicit that you can't quote Eidos B'Ksav, Dafka, because it's not a Shtar. He says it's not a Shtar, you can only quote a Shtar, and if you just have Eidos B'Ksav, that does not work as Shtar, you cannot quote it. And there might be another day in Tosos there who implies the other side, but it's very unclear. As everyone's like noted in these Tosos, and with these, the reason why I'm not going to them so much is because they're very ambiguous, and there are multiple ways to read all of them. So I'm kind of just focusing on the points that like are like clearer and more explicit than the others. Seems like Binyamin likes that. Okay, and then the final nafkamina of this question, which actually wasn't, Ravozak didn't bring it explicitly as a nafkamina of this question, but I confirmed it with him on the side, and he confirmed that it would also fit into be a nafkamina of this broader question. So this is the question of, when you're quoting Shitas Rabbeinu Tam, that Eidos B'Ksav is ineffective only for an Ilim, but it's fine for anybody else, so long as you're Roy Lahagid, you're verbal. So do we say, do we invoke the principle of Kol Roy Labila Ein Bila Ma'akevespo, Kol Shein Roy Labila Bila Ma'akevespo? Basically, the din that the Gemara in Menachos, Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, tells us that you're supposed to bring up to only bring up to 60 isaron of flour in the kli when it comes to carbon mincha, because that is the shear that has the theoretical ability to mix together with the oil for the carbon mincha, and that's where the Gemara applies this principle of Kol Roy. So long as it's only goes up to 60 isaron of flour, so that's enough. Even if you don't practically mix the flour together with the oil, so long as it has the ability to mix together with the oil, that's good enough. As opposed to if you have more than 60 isaron of flour, so then it doesn't even have the theoretical chance to mix together, so that would be a problem. So do you quote that when you're talking about Shitas Rabbeinu Tam here? When we're saying that somebody who is sending in written eidos, it works because he theoretically has the ability to testify, so you would think it kind of makes sense to quote Kol Roy Labila, because on the surface, it seems to be a perfect application. And indeed, Tosos and Yavamos does quote it. He paraphrases it, but he does mention it. But the other Balei HaTosos, Tosos and Bava Basra, and Tosos and Ksubis, do not quote it. And the question is, why would you be so hesitant to quote Kol Roy Labila? After all, it seems like it would be a good application. So we gave two reasons for that. So the first reason is about Kol Roy Labila, how you understand it more generally. Some might be hesitant to quote Kol Roy Labila here because you might think that the principle of Kol Roy Labila in general is saved for kiyumim, for mitzvos, when it comes to bringing the carbon mincha, when there would be a kiyum of the havas hakorban. So it might only be true when there's a kiyum. And the point being that so long as you're roy to fulfill the kiyum lechatchila, so then we allow you even to go the bidyavid route. But outside of kiyumim, like an edus, which is a much more factual question, like do we believe the edim or not? Are they naman or not? So then you might not apply Kol Roy Labila. So that might be why you're hesitant to quote it. For one reason. And then the second reason you might be hesitant to quote Kol Roy Labila, because specifically you think something that's very, very, very significant about Shitas Rabbeinu Tam. And that is that Rabbeinu Tam thinks that, there's really a question, like why does Rabbeinu Tam think that this is true? As we noted, at the end of the day, if you think that fundamentally there's something really wrong with written Eidos, so just like Misvara, meaning you could say it's Xer Sarkasuv, but like what would be the idea behind limiting an Elam specifically just because he doesn't have the ability to speak? So for that, we explained that Rabbeinu Tam might dafka allow someone who's Roy Lahagid because we basically apply the principle of Ksiva Kedibor, in a sense. That so long as one is Roy Lahagid, so we view their written Eidos as if they're being Magid, as if they're verbally testifying, if you have the ability to speak, so then we view your speech as happening through your writing. In contrast to an Elam, whose mouth is essentially sealed shut, we cannot possibly apply to him Ksiva Kedibor because it would be impossible. I'm just going to finish up this point. And therefore, you want to say about Rabbeinu Tam specifically that he's trying to apply the concept of Ksiva Kedibor. And if that's the case, that you're trying to dafka apply Ksiva Kedibor, you might be more hesitant to quote Kolarai Labila, because after all, by Kolarai Labila, it's seemingly that's not what's going on. Nobody thinks that having the theoretical capacity to mix together the flour and the oil means it's as if we look at the oil, the flour and oil, as if they're actually mixed together. Nobody thinks that. So it would be kind of like a bad parallel. So Idafka would not want to quote it. And then just to connect this point about Ksiva Kedibor, it's like the general framework. So I think that if you say Ksiva Kedibor in Rabbeinu Tam, so I think that that fits a lot better if you think that Eidos B'Ksav is working as its own category, really like in the camp of Eidos, a new form of Eidos, as opposed to working as a shtar. Because if it's working as a shtar, so then it's unclear why we Dafka would want to say your Ksiva is Kedibor. Like, why does the shtar need to talk? As opposed to if we keep Eidos B'Ksav as its own category, this new category within the camp of Eidos, so then it might make sense that we want to have some value of Dibor to your Eidos specifically, like an Eid typically has. Sarah, question,
yeah.
Yeah,
so which is the Makor that we think Tosos is? I think he said Tosos, Tosos doesn't quote the whole idea of healing. It's not like he quotes healing with Arrow, or he just doesn't quote the whole Gemara and Gittin. Doesn't quote the Gemara and Gittin altogether, and doesn't say the whole how.
Which Tosos? Wait, which one? Tosos and Ksubas does not quote the Gemara and Gittin.
Quote that idea of him would be something at all.
Right, that's right. He doesn't mention Elaine. But he does say Roy Lahagid. Yeah. He doesn't mean
Ksubas. And Ksubas, he doesn't talk about Roy Lahagid at all, I think. And in Baba Basra, he paraphrases Roy.
Right, so you could say it's a spectrum. I mean, it's a spectrum. Like, how much, like... Wait, yeah, okay, but what's your question?
So like, in Baba Basra, he basically quoted. So
he's basically quoting what?
In the words of Kolarai Labila,
oh, he says Kolarai Labila.
Right,
right.
It's pretty clear he's quoting the same principle.
Well, maybe not.
So where is he pulling Kolarai Labila in Haggadah Ma'akev?
Well, that might be the point, meaning, well, he didn't say in Ma'akev's word. I think he just says Kolarai Labila. So if you say that it's, let's say, like Ksiva Kedibor, maybe that's what he's saying.
And meaning, he's not trying to invoke...
Maybe not. Meaning you know that because you saw Kolarai Labila, but if you just saw that to us, would you be like, oh, he's of course referencing Kolarai Labila? Probably not.
But there's no good example. But like it's unclear. Without any references,
so what about the other one?
In Ksubas, he doesn't quote Rabbeinu Tam, I think.
Yeah,
correct me if I'm wrong.
He quotes the Re.
He quotes the Re, but not Rabbeinu
Tam. He quotes the Re as you can be Sholech Nigeres, but he never says, oh, and what about the Gemara Gittin that says...
Okay, but it's the same Shita.
He never mentioned
it. No,
he doesn't
mention
it.
What?
In Ksubas, he doesn't explain to Pik Savam as it only applies to Ely.
Yeah, but the Chiddush of saying that one can send written Eidos to Beis Din is, of course, taking into account the fact that EPM is limited to Elim. Otherwise, how does it work? Then you have to say that. But I hear you. Like, yeah, he doesn't... Meaning, maybe you're right. Like, because he doesn't get into it there, so that's why he didn't call Kolarai Labila. I hear you. But, yeah, it's not 100% clear. He's just pointing out theoretically... Rav Lozenberg is pointing out theoretically, like, why would you maybe be hesitant to quote it? But it's not Bokro. Yeah, okay. Fine. So moving on from Shitas Rabbeinu Tam. Moving back to Shitas Rabbeinu Tam.
Sorry. A better paradigm might be Kola only Kisarav Kisarav Dami, like if you're not quoting Bila.
Right.
Because then
right,
there,
no one
there
quotes
are
that.
Actually they'll say we see it as though it's you got to the end of the process.
Right,
but
right. But no, does anyone quote that here?
Linguistic contract.
But no one quotes
it. But
that would be good.
That would be a better parallel.
I guess it would be good if you found that. Yeah.
What?
There goes that. Yeah.
No, I'm just wondering, did we give a reason for saying that you couldn't see Kolarai Labila and Bila Makevato as basically you see it as if it's Niblam?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why exactly that's like so pushy.
Right.
But I also kind of thought that. But yeah, I don't know enough of why that'd be so pushy. I guess because like what would be the advantage to saying that? Like what would the Nafkamino of that be?
If you view it that way, then who would care if you actually mixed it? If you view it as if it was mixed, was able to have it mixed, and why would I mix it?
That's true here also. Like, if you could talk, so then... Are you saying, why don't you just mix it? I don't know,
why don't you not mix it?
Oh, if that's considered mixing?
Right.
So why don't you just...
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Because that's still the lechatchila. Okay, I hear that. Right. Because, like, you're feeling lechatchila now.
Right.
Right, okay. Yeah.
That's fine. Says, Kevan Chuzofer Hades. Says you're able to be Shaleah.
Which Tosos is this?
Ksubas. Why are you able to send it in Eidos? The only problem with healing with Yitzhabel is when you don't have Satira.
You could send it in because it's Eidos. Yeah. Yeah, but again, you need to address Mipiyam. So what's Mipiyam Pasolim?
But you can never get Eidos.
Mipiyam is when you don't remember it. No, but the Gemara didn't have the application of Mipiyam Tehillim. How are you going to explain that? Yeah, no, but I hear you. But he doesn't.
I hear you.
I don't think it's mochar from there. I'm saying you're right. Meaning because he doesn't bring up Elaim, so then maybe that's why he didn't bring up Kol Rai Lebila. He's not talking about that application.
Right.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah.
I don't think the deal is that we mentioned the cheer is like as much of a deal as Sumas.
I hear that.
Like, there was no place for intention.
I hear that. Okay, but at least it might be a deal. Efshir with Kol Rai Lahagid.
Yeah, that one. Meaning.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, but I agree. For the long shubas, it's harder. Okay, fine. So moving on to the Shitas HaRambam. Ah, sorry, I sent it so quickly. I should have been a little bit more dramatic. Moving on to the Shitas HaRambam. Okay. So the Rambam in Hilchos Eidos, Perek Gimel, Halacha Dalid, asks an extremely simple and fundamental question. And his question is the following. That if we indeed, like Rashi Ala Torah says, we have this psul of mipiem v'lo mipiksavam, which essentially passels and prevents you from sending in all written edus, so then how could a shtar ever work? Because after all, a shtar is always just written edus. So how could a shtar ever be effective? It fundamentally flies in the face of the principle of mipiem v'lo mipiksavam. Again, of course, if you hold like Rabbeinu Tam, that Mipiyam is only limited to an Elim, so then obviously this isn't a question, even to begin with, because written Eidos is typically effective. So then you wouldn't really run into that problem. But the question is otherwise, how can Shtar ever work if you have the problem of Mipiyam? Okay, so what does the Rambam actually answer to this question in Hilchos Eidos? So the Rambam says, basically, Anachinami, the Rambam says that yes, seemingly on the surface what the Rambam is saying, he says, "Midivrei Sofrim shechot kandini mamonos beidus shabeshtar af bishen edim kayamim kadesh lo tino dela spifne lobim." Ram says, "Enochinami shtar on a DRS level has the chisaron of the psul of mipiem written edos, and therefore it is only going to be effective on the level of divrei sofrim, not necessarily derabanan, but divrei sofrim." And the Ramban in the Hasagos in Shoresh Beis asks the very obvious question. Says the Ramban, we have several examples of where we know that shtaros work on a DRS level. What about the entire concept of a get? What about the entire concept of shtar kiddushin? What about the entire concept of shtar shechror? We know that there are examples explicitly in the Torah where shtar works DRSa. And if you read the Ramban there, it's clear that he proves that shtar in these cases works as both a kinyan, at least in get, he says, both as a kenyan, a chalos, to effect, to create a chalos gerushin, and they work as a raya. If the woman pulls the get out of her pocket on a DRISA level, we believe that she actually did indeed get divorced through that get. So what is the Rambam talking about when he says that every shtar is working midivrei sofrim? Okay, so how do we answer this question for the Rambam? So we mentioned a couple of simple answers who basically like read the Rambam Kipshuto and who don't make any fancy chilukim that I'm alluding to that we're going to get to soon. Pashup Shat in the Rambam seems to say that shtaros are indeed always midivrei sofrim. So how can that work? So the Pnei Yoshua and Gidin seems to say that for the Rambam, whenever shtaros work, when you just have Erei Hasima, so that's always working through the principle of Afkinu, at least in Gerushin. It's always working through the principle of Afkinu. And therefore, that's the Rambam means when he says this Derabanan. And Rav Rosenzweig noted that that's very difficult because the Rambam in general is actually the Rishon that's very hesitant. In fact, he never actually explicitly quotes the principle of Afkinu Rabbanan L'Kedusha Minei. So it's very difficult to say that, at least within the world of Gerushin, that the Rambam thinks that every single case of Shtar Gerushin with Eidei Chasima alone is working through the principle of Afkinu. That would be a major expansion of the Shitas HaRambam, who never even mentions Afkinu. Another example of someone who reads the Rambam Kipshuto is the Lecha Mishnah. The Lecha Mishnah says that the Rambam holds that shtaros work midivrei sofrim only when the edim aren't around. He's medayik in the Rambam's lashon. The Rambam says that it works afal pi shena edim kayomim. So it's only going to be midivrei sofrim when the edim are not around to testify. But so long as theoretically the Edim are around to testify, we say that shtaros work. They could just basically give a shtar. And that, as we noted, really makes the Rambam sound a little bit like Rabbeinu Tam. Not in terms of like, you know, Elaim versus someone who's verbal, but in terms of someone who's not around to testify and someone who is around to testify. That basically the Rambam has the structure. He says, if you theoretically cannot testify at all, because you're not around, so then it doesn't work on a DRISA level. But if theoretically you have the capability of testifying because you're around, so then we don't have to ask you, and we could just use the shtar and it works with DRISA. And that's very difficult because the presentation of the Rambam, the lashon of the Rambam, seems to be straight out that mipiem is always a problem. He says edus b'ksav does not work. So it's hard to say that he holds like Rabbeinu Tam. I mean, it's an interesting diuk, but the whole halacha, it seems against that. Yeah. Because you're saying then we know the get works, even though they're dead and they're not around. True, right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't even remember if he quoted the Ramban on Asagos, if he's answering that. I don't think he was. I think he was referring to something else. Yeah, but I hear that. Yeah, that would not answer that question. Okay, so that's a couple of answers that I'll read the Rambam, Kipshuto. And now we move on to the answers that the Achronim give for the Rambam that make a massive fundamental distinction between what we know as Shtar Kinyan and Shtar Raya. And the way they basically explain it is that the Rambam says that Shtar was working with every Sofrim, that's only when it comes to Shtar Raya, let's say like a Halva, where the Malva lends money to the Lova, they have a Shtar written, and basically that Shtar is basically, right, just a proof. It didn't necessarily like create the Chalos of the Halva, but the shtar basically serves as a raya that the halva took place. Or also maybe a mechira. So let's say Reuven sells something to Shimon and the kinyan might take place through kesef, but they write up a shtar as a raya. Versus shtar kinyan, let's say in things like gerushin and kiddushin and shtar shechror, where the piece of paper, the shtar itself, is affecting the halos and the kinyan. And it's not just, it might serve as a raya as well, but it's not just serving as a raya, right? Primarily, probably it serves as the kinyan and the halos. So the question is, so we make this distinction, Shtar Kinyan and Shtar Raya for the Rambam, but like, how do you explain it? Why at the end of the day, if Edus B'Ksav is such a fundamental problem, written Edus is never okay, so how do you get out of that problem? Mipiem v'lo mipiksavam. Why would just because you have something that's a Shtar Kinyan, why all of a sudden would that rise above the fundamental issue of mipiem? Okay, so to answer that, you basically have to take a step back and understand how does Shtar work in general. There's a bunch of really, really strange phenomena when it comes to shtar. And the most basic one being that, how do we know that the shtar wasn't completely forged? Whenever a guy shows up with a shtar, or the woman shows up with a shtar that has this whole story told on it, and the Edom sign on it, how do we know that she didn't just write that in her bedroom 3 minutes ago? So that's like a fundamental problem in shtar. And to that, the Gemara and Gittin answers. The Gemara and Gittin says, by invoking Reish Lakish, Kol hachasumim al hashtar, nasa kimi shenechgru idusan bebezdin, that's the chiddush of shtar. That shtar we view somehow in like this magical way that the edim are actually, that the edos has actually already been accepted by Bezdin, and we assume that right off the bat that the shtar is not mezuyah. How do you explain that? So Rashi right there on the spot in Gittin explains very simply that, well, there's a good umdana. It's logical to assume that the shtar wasn't made up because we have a cheskas kashrus. We assume people aren't liars. So on a DRISA level, there's an umdana. The question is that all shtar is? Is it just the umdana? Seems for sure true that the umdana is part of the shtar, how we know that a shtar is authentic. But is that all there is to the story? So on this, we have basically two big shitos in the Achronim. We have the Shita of the Nesivos, and then we have the Shita of Rav Chaim. So the Nesivos explains that in general, when it comes to every single shtar, so there's always two steps to the story. We have the Tzivoy Habal as the first step, and then we have the Maisa Kinyan, which is the second step. So on the first step, when it comes to Tzivoy Habal, so we need to just have some awareness that there was an initial Tzivoy Habal. And once that piece of paper with the confirmed Tzivoy Habal ends up in the Tofes Hashtar's hands, so we then fill in the gap with an Anan Sadi, with a good umdana, that the Maisa took place after there was a Tzivoy Habal. Because after all, how did this piece of paper, with this powerful confirmed Tzivoy Habal, how did that piece of paper end up, let's say, in a woman's hands, if the Baal did not give it to her? and they didn't follow through on the Maisa Gerushin. So of course, it ended up taking place. Once you have step one of the Tzibah HaBaal, you have step two of the Maisa Gerushin. So how does this explain how a shtar works, and how does it explain the difference between shtar kinyan and shtar raya? So on this, the Nesiva says that on the Tzibah HaBaal, which is all we care about when it comes to the Edei Chasima, all they are testifying about is that there was a Tzibah HaBaal. All they're confirming for us is that there was a Tzibah HaBaal. And the Nesiva says Mechadish that when it comes to Tzibah HaBaal, it has much lower standards than regular Edus. It's something like maybe a Hakara. He says it's a little bit more than a Gilei Milsa for certain Afkamina, but he says it's not classic Edus. It doesn't have the standards of Edus. He says it doesn't even, a Tzibah HaBaal, a confirmed Tzibah HaBaal, doesn't even need to be given over to a Bezdin. And it's clear that just showing that the Baal was mitzaveh something to, for the shtar to be written, or for the gerushin, for the get to be written, it has lower standards, just a hakara. So the Edei Chasima have the ability to testify about that, and that does not fall under their shikshin of mipiyam v'lo mipi ksavam, because it has much lower standards. And that wouldn't be considered Edos lifnei bezdin. It doesn't even need to be in bezdin. And therefore, on a formal level, you don't have the psul of mipiyam. And then you have the second step of the process of shtar, which is the anan sadi. And of course, that's not subject to mipiyam because it's an anan sadi, right? It's just something that's like intuitive that we can intuit ourselves. That obviously has no problem of written edus because it has nothing to do with edus. Okay, and therefore, based off that olcheshbon, the Nesiva says that we can be mechalik between shtar kinyan and shtar raya, because when it comes to shtar kinyan, so the edus is literally just on the tzivoy habal, which is not subject to mipiyam. It's not edus lifnei bezdin, but edei. And then we have the anan sadi. However, says the Nesivas, when it comes to shtar raya on a diaraisa level, that will not work. That will have the chisaron and the psul of mipiyam v'lo mipi ksavam. Why? Because in that case, it's clear that the edei chasima are not just trying to be made on the tzibay habal, which you'd be able to get away with when it comes to mipiyam, because it's not a formal edel sifnei bezdin. Says no. When it comes to shtar raya, what's written in a shtar raya? A shtar raya doesn't just say that the baal, doesn't just tell us that the baal like initiated a shtar for like gerushin. A shtar raya contains the entire story. A shtar raya says that the Baal initiated this shtar, and that the Baal, or a man, lent money to someone else, or that the Baal sold something to someone else. A shtar raya is trying to go on the entire story, the entire Maisa, not just the Tchilas Davar, but also the Sof Davar. And if the Edom are trying to pull that off, the Edom are trying to testify about that, that is going to be classic Edus, which will fall under these restrictions of Lifnei Bezdin, and thereby also Mipiyam V'lo Mipi Ksavam. That is the Mahalacha of the Nesivas. So that explains a little bit how shtar works more generally, and it explains why would you mechalik with Rambam between shtar kinyan and shtar raya. Yeah, exactly.
According to Nesivas, when there is a shtar kinyan, like once we make this discussion that it can be used in this way, so can it also serve as a shtar raya? Absolutely.
Yeah, it has to for the Rambam to answer for the Rambam. Yeah. Because right. There we say that the Edus was only on the Tzibah HaBaal, so it's already accepted.
Right.
And then Memela, once you have a Shvuyah Shtara, and like a formal Shtar, which will also give you the Anan Sadi.
Why do you need a Shvuyah Shtar for the Anan Sadi?
Because
like,
on a simple level...
You should have an Anan Sadi either way, no?
Not necessarily, because... So, I think it's one of two things. Either the Ashvuyah Shtara is not contributing to Anan Sadi, it's contributing to the Neman Asan, the Tzibah HaBaal. So that, right, like the Edom need to formally like be labeled on this like formal shtar for that to be, for that to register as Neman Asan Tzibah HaBaal. Or it could go on the Anan Sadi, and I'd say that maybe you still need a Shvuyah Shtar because the whole Anan Sadi is like, well, how'd she end up with this like really powerful like piece of paper in her hand? So maybe it's only viewed as like powerful with a Chalos if there's a Shvuyah Shtar. That's more likely what I think. Okay. Yeah, you know.
How would other Shito understand how a shtar works? Like, not how they would explain it, but just how would it...
So Rav Chaim's actually not necessarily limited to shtar kinyan and shtar raya. Like, at that point, he's working within... I misspoke. The Nesivas is limited to the Rambam. I think it'd be very hard to say the Nesivas is proud in shtar raya as well. In the piece, he's speaking for the Rambam. Right. A couple other Rishonim he mentions, with a couple other Nafkim, you know, like the Ran... but yeah, it'd be hard to say it's Pshat Shtar Raya. Okay.
You wouldn't have a way that other shtar would explain how shtar works.
Correct. He's answering for the Rambam.
Right.
Yeah, we'll get to the other shtar soon. Yeah, we're there. Okay. Okay, so that's the mahalach of the nesivos, how shtar works more generally, and specifically how that leads you to be mechalel between shtar kinyan and shtar raya. Okay. Yeah. So then we have the second mahalach in the Acharonim, which is the shita of Reb Chaim. Primarily, Reb Chaim in Hilchos Eidos on the spot on the Rambam in Perek Gimel Halacha Daled. Okay. So Reb Chaim basically says, I don't want to get right now into the specific explanation of Reb Chaim. We'll get to that soon. But just to say it in like a very like crisp way. So Reb Chaim basically just says that the category of the Gzeres HaKasuv of Din Shtar, of Das Mischayev, which is not the same as Classic Eidos, this new category of this Gzeres HaKasuv, of Din Shtar, of Das Mischayev, that is limited to Shtar Kinyan and not Shtar Raya. And he doesn't necessarily spell out why. Just to say simply what this means, just like structurally, Din Shtar, it means that maybe you have Edim, Edi Chasima, who originally testified, they sign their names off, but then Shtar kind of takes on a life of its own, and that there's a Shtar that testifies through that Das Mischayev of the Baal Antobis Ashtar, but I'll get to explaining more of that soon. But Reb Chaim basically just says that the Din Shtar is limited to Shtar Kinyan and not Shtar Raya, and that's how you explain the Rambam. And the way you explain, and what that means is, essentially, without explaining what the chilek, why you'd be mechalig, the point is that din shtar means that this isn't edus anymore. So therefore, it's not subject to mipiyam v'lomim piksavam. You have this new category, this new instrument, as we've been calling it, called a shtar, which is not edus, which is not edim. The edim aren't coming and testifying. It's something new. It might work as a chefs shel edus. It might parallel what edim are doing generally, but it's working as a new chalos, one that is not subject to the limitation of BPM. So the question is, why would this like category of Din Shtar only apply to Shtar Kinyan and not Shtar Raya? So to that we gave two explanations. So one explanation given by Rosenzweig, and the other he quoted in the name of the Rav. So one explanation, which is very straightforward, is that the category of Kinyan and Raya are just fundamentally different in terms of what they're trying to accomplish. That is, that when it comes to a shtar raya, so it's just like the way we refer to it, it's a secondary category. It's not necessarily affecting anything. It's not so chashuv necessarily in its own right. All it does is prove that something else that's chashuv took place. It's just a secondary category. So it might not achieve like a unique status and stature to be considered this new chalos of a din shtar, like this new instrument. In contrast to a shtar kinyan, which is accomplishing so much, and therefore it does have this status and stature and this chashivos to earn itself like this new chalos of a din shtar, kind of like an achshave type svara. Like it's accomplishing so much, so we're going to say that it accomplishes this new status. So that is the explanation of Rosenzweig. What he quoted from the Rav is that the whole notion of Das Mischayev is just only applicable by Shtar Kinyan and not Shtar Raya. And that is for a very simple reason. When it comes to Shtar, just to define, like what do we mean by Das Mischayev? So just said very simply, it means that you have a commitment from the Mischayev. In this, let's say, in the case of a halva, when someone is, someone is borrowing money and therefore he's producing a shtar, which means he's going to later owe money. So that's a commit. He's a Mischayev and he is committing himself he's basically like exposing himself and like making himself like vulnerable to giving some type of like leeway and power to the Baal Toves HaShtar. So the Rav explains that Das Mischayev is only applicable when it comes to Shtar Kinyan, not Shtar Raya, because by Shtar Raya, what's the Hischayevos? What is he really like committing to? He's not necessarily really like giving anything of himself so much. All he's doing is providing you with a piece of paper that is going to take away from his ability to lie. That's not such a commitment. In contrast to Shtar Kinyan, it's a major commitment. You're losing a piece of property, or you're committing to creating... You're committing to creating a chalos gerushin, a chalos kedushin, shichror. So those are major commitments, and therefore Das Mischayev is relevant. The Das Mischayev, as we'll get to soon, is the whole underpinning when it comes to staros in general. Yeah.
I'm still struggling to see why these are like so substantively different. I mean, the point from either one of them, whether or not you want to emphasize Das Mischayev, is just that the star isn't fundamentally really doing anything for Staraya, or that it is for Starkinya, right? I mean, the reason you're not being mitchayev is because it's not doing anything for Shtar Raya, whereas it is doing something for Shtar Kinyan. Did I
Yeah, but I'm saying, and that would account for the chiluk, right? Isn't that what the Rav said?
I'm trying to say that both of the explanations we gave seemed similar.
Oh, it's the same?
Yeah. Maybe
because the first, like Rosa's explanation is not even necessarily invoking Das Mishkayev. And he's just saying...
The reason that there's no Das Mishkayev in the Shtar Raya is that none of the Shtar doesn't do anything. I mean, they're both connected at that same point.
I hear that, but it's definitely a different emphasis. I think it's a different emphasis.
It's a different emphasis, but I'm sure,
yeah. Yeah, one's referring to, like, what is the piece of paper accomplishing, and one is focusing more on, okay, and how does that hurt the Mishkayev? Right, it's like two different components. But yeah, but they come from the same place.
Circles, yeah.
Okay, that I agree with. Yeah. Okay. And Rav Chaim's main nafkamina of this idea of din shtar applying to shtar kinyan and ashtar raya, which we'll get to a little bit more soon, manifests itself when it comes to the requirement of drisha v'chakira. Now, the Gemara in Sanhedrin seems to imply that you need drisha v'chakira when it comes to a shtar mu'uchar, a shtar, let's say, on a halva, that the date on the shtar is listed is later than the actual date that the loan occurred. The Gemara seems to say there that you need drisha v'chakira. But Rav Chaim points to other Gemaras that say explicitly that you don't need Drisha v'Chakira when it comes to Shtari Kiddushin, Shtar Gidin, etc. Rav Chaim says that's a clear raya for my chiluk that, yeah, when it comes to Shtari Kinyan, because it has the status of Din Shtar, no connection to Kabbalah v'Agados, Eidos, Lifnei Bezdin. It's a Din Shtar, and therefore it's working differently than Eidim generally do. It's not subject to Drisha v'Chakira as opposed to Shtar Raya, which does not have the status of Din Shtar. It's still working within the camp of Eidos, and they will be subject to the requirement of Drisha v'Chakira. Okay. Okay, moving on. Question is outside the sheet of the Rambam. If you don't hold like the Rambam, like the Ramban clearly doesn't, because he argues and he asks on the Rambam, so how do you explain what the Rambam started with as a problem in the first place? Which is, if you hold, like Rashi al-Torah, that written Eidos is problematic, you can't send in written Eidos, so then how can a shtar ever be effective? How could you just, like, say so confidently, oh yeah, shtaros just work, diaraisa. Aren't shtaros just written Eidos? So how does that work? How can you separate the categories? Okay, so for this, we first quoted Rashi and Gidin, who has a pretty explicit lashon. It's not so clear what he's referring to, but right away when the Gemara says, mipiyam v'lo mipiksavam, that Gemara and Gidin that we quoted in Daf Ayin Aleph, so Rashi says that shtar is not subject to this limitation of BPM. Why not? Says Rashi, chasmu biyomo. That it's signed on its day, that day. So what exactly does that mean? So Ravun's like thought that maybe what Rashi's referring to, it's not clear. The Ksos also might be learning Rashi and getting like that. It's not clear if the Ksos is referring to that Rashi, but he might be. So in Rashi and Gidin, the way Ravun's like was explaining it, might be just referring to the uniqueness of shtar. Based off what we just mentioned, from Rav Chaim. Except, of course, without making the distinction between Shtar Kinyan and Shtar Raya, because that's a Rambam thing. Outside the Rambam, you don't need to do that. But we're relating to the Chiddush of Shtar more generally. Again, we mentioned the internal problem of Shtar, that it could be Mezuyav. But even if it's not Mezuyav, even if you apply Reish Lakish, at the end of the day, even if you say that this Shtar 100% was written authentically, the Eidim who signed on it were 100% Kosher, very basic question, still, how does a Shtar ever tell you anything? The Eidim signed off on that piece of paper. It could be months before the Maisa Kinyan or the Maisa Halva, before anything ever took place. So who cares that this whole thing is authentic and that the Eidim are good people who signed on it? At the end of the day, they signed on it and they like authorized it before anything happened. And that's exactly what Rashi's highlighting when he says, Chasmu biyomo. That exactly is the whole point of Shtar. That's the Chiddush of Shtar. The fact that it can be written before something takes place, based off of the way Rav Chaim explains Shtar in general, outside the sheet of the Rambam even, the way we explain Shtar in general is that it's based off this principle of Das Mishkayev. And the way Rav Rosenzweig likes to explain it is like he likes to refer to it as, right, the blank check. Basically meaning that the Mishkayev commits himself and gives of himself and allows the Baal Tovis HaShtar, who's holding this new instrument, this new Chalos, this new Din Shtar, not classic Eidim, a new Din Shtar. We basically give the Baal Tovis HaShtar the right to read into that shtar, a plausible narrative, which has to like make sense. Again, you still need the umdana part. He has to read into it a narrative that makes sense. And he has the ability to read that narrative into the shtar, to shame the Eidim who signed on it. even though those Edom only signed on it beforehand. But that's what Rashi's highlighting. That's the whole Chiddush of Shtar. The fact, and that's how Shtar works. The fact that even though it's written beforehand, we allow the Baal HaShtar to read a narrative into it. The name of the Edom. And the Edom themselves are not there testifying. The Edom themselves could be long gone. But the Chiddush of Shtar, the nature of Shtar, is that we give this Kalach to the Baal HaShtar to read this narrative in. And that's how you can explain why Shtar was work in general. Even though we have a limitation of Mipiyam, Lo Mipiyam Ksavam, Shtar is a completely new category. It was written by Gavra Edom to begin with, but then it completely took on a new life of its own. It now is a Chepsa Shel Edos, B'Shem the Edom, but the Edom could be totally gone. It's not like we necessarily think that the Edom are like showing up and talking. No, the Shtar itself is being made based off the narrative that the Baal plugs in, B'Shem, with the authority of the Ede Chasima. And that's what allows Shtar to work in general. And the famous Shita that's quoted very often for this idea is the Baal Amorn Yevamos, who says explicitly that Mipi Ksavam is only a problem of Mipi Ksavam, and not Mipi Ksavo, that only Mipi Ksavam, Edus, given over by Gavra Edom is a problem. But if it's Ksav Yado, if it's initiated by the Ba, if it's initiated by the Mischayev, Das Mischayev, he gives of himself for a Shtar to be written over, that's not classic Edom anymore. That is not subject to Mipiyam. It's Das Mischayev. It's a new category called Shtar. The major chiddush that we pointed out of the Baal Amor, that he takes it a step further, is that he thinks that this isn't just working like as a din shtar, a new category, and that's it. He actually invokes, I don't think explicitly, but the flow of the Baal Amor sounds this way, that it's working me din hodas baal din kmei edim dami. So for him, actually, at the end of the day, it'd be interesting because it does have actually a din of like more classic edim, maybe. But then you just have to know about how Hodas Baal Din works generally. But that is a major extension of the Baal Amor, which Rav Zalman noted is a bit of a chiddush. It's not clear that Ksav Yado works via Hodas Baal Din in general. Maybe in Get, it's not clear that it always works that way. Some other assumptions being made in that Baal Amor as well. Okay, so last part, but it's a question.
You still have to make a
No. No. The whole point.
I don't get why that.
You missed it.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
The only way you can say before it happens is you can't sign a Shtar Raya before the event happens.
Why not? No, exactly. Meaning the Mischayev is giving a right to the Baal Tovei Shtar to read a narrative in.
What's an example of a Shtar Raya where this is actually happening? You sign before it happens and you're using it as a Shtar Raya?
Yeah, exactly.
Why is it less relevant if you sign after?
Well, because you sign after. Or is it basing off of Rashi, so it's supposed
to move Yoga. Right, so what I'm saying, let's say an example of Shtar Raya. So,
yeah, it's like
let's
you said,
Shtar Raya is still going to need the same mechanism. Why can Aiden testify today on something they saw 10 years ago if they're not actively testifying and they can't speak
when they're signing up?
Okay, so they signed afterwards. So we still have to explain the mechanism.
They still signed before him. Saying, let's take an example of Shtar Raya. So let's say Reuven sells Karka to Shimon, and the way that they're doing that Kenyan Karka is through Kesef, right? And then, so they do that on like January 10th. On January 1st, like 9 days before it happened, they agree together to like write up a Shtar.
And
that's right?
That
what?
How does that work? It doesn't work as a Shtar.
Isn't that a Shtar both done? That would be possible.
How are you able to do that beforehand?
So you think that Rashi is limited to Shtar Kenyan?
Yeah.
But Shtar Raya, I think Rakhine is going to say works the same way.
Oh, well, let's say you write it up and they sign it.
Isn't they can definitely sign it after. The Shtar work is that like the Lova is going to like write up the Shtar and get the Amosai and then he's going to give it to the Malveh.
Yeah, meaning it's written before. Let's say it's the same day. Yeah, the Shtar is written before.
Yeah.
Let's say you agree that it's going to be a Milveh B'Shtar. Of course you write it up before.
And
they have something before. What are you starting with? Don't let's say it's that day, 10 minutes before.
Isn't that part of the hack of whatever the Shtar is? Like, yeah, it might be.
I don't know. Let's say a Shtar Mecher. I know. I think you could write it.
It's also a Shtar Kenyan.
No, I'm saying a Shtar Raya for Shtar Mecher. That's
right. Okay, so that you would write out after they've
done. No, I'm not sure. I think I don't know, Binyamin, do you know?
You could write it up after.
Yeah, of course, but can you also write it up before? I think you can. For a Shtar Raya. Let's say it's written that day, meaning you have a Zman, like it's a day. I don't know. Let's say it's within the time frame. It's not enough time. Let's say for anything else to take place, that'd be a problem. The typical problem with Shtar Mukta. Maybe. But I don't think this Rashi is limited to that. I don't think it makes sense, meaning because the Chiddush, the Chiluk between Kenyan and Raya is a Chiddush for the Rama. Yeah, okay. So based off that, So let's just finish up. So what does like this understanding of shtar tell us, of mipiyim, tell us about shtar more generally? The way we're explaining it, according to Rav Chaim, the way Rav likes explaining it, via this like blank check. So how does shtar work in general? So number one, as we noted, obviously this idea helps address like the internal issues with shtar. Like maybe it's mezuyaf, maybe these eidim aren't kosher, maybe this maisa never happened. So based off this blank check idea, so that we basically just like give the Baal Toves HaShtar the right to read in a narrative, so it kind of explains those things at least a little bit and addresses them. Also, the concept of Ashvui Ashtara works well with this. I don't think it has to be, but it works well to say that we have certain formal requirements to create a shtar, like Beis Edim, Das Mischayev, Tikkun Shtaros. So those things help if you're trying to create like a new chalos shtar. Again, not mochrach, but it helps. Okay, and then just like the last couple of questions, when it comes to this idea being applied to shtar more generally, so one is the phenomenon that we see in many places that even though this may have a shtar may have began with Gavra Edim signing off on it, so it seems that we have indications that a shtar actually works even stronger than regular Edim. And that somehow it turns into this chalos, which is more. So one, obviously, we noted is maybe, you know, mipiyim. But there are other examples as well. So one example that Rav Chaim talks about for the Rambam is, let's say you use your own shtar to remind you about the Eidos, the Gemara that we mentioned earlier. The Gemara comes up in Yevamos and Ksubos. So what if you use, let's say, a shtar that you signed off on, and then it was never used, and then you want to use that shtar to remind you in order to testify. So would that be considered, the Gemara seems to say that maybe it's a problem with BPM. The Rambam seems to say it's a problem with Eid Mipiyed. And just a very basic question, aside from, you know, the steer with the Gemara, just Misvara, why the Eid Mipiyed? Eidim signed off on this shtar, even if it was never used. Then Eidim are going and they're using that shtar as a source for their knowledge. But it's their own writing, right? Like at the time they knew about it, and it's kind of like their own writing. So why is that not considered quoting themselves? So why would that be a problem? So Rav Chaim explains that is a problem with Eid Mipiyed, because when you are referencing a shtar as a source of knowledge, that's actually not you. It's not the same. Even though you, the Eid Chasima, were originally the one who signed off on that shtar, it took on a life of its own. And it moved on from being part of you and your life as a Gavra Eid to being Chetze Shel Eidos. And that now turned into its own entity. So you're going to use that as a reference. That's Eid Mipi Eid, right? It's a new Eid. It's not you anymore. Okay. So that's one example. Another example, and we're going to move on from the other ones for now, just to finish up. But one other example that we'll mention, which we made reference to before, is the requirement of Drisha V'Chakira. So Rav Chaim seems to assume that this idea of din shtar, this blank check idea, does not require drisha v'chakira. And the question is, why? In general, by drisha v'chakira, we noted that there is a machlokes, why drisha v'chakira is necessary. We know that drisha v'chakira is necessary in order to make it edos ata yachol hazima, it has to be able to be mazim. The question is why? So some, as we noted, from the Noda Behuda, take that literally, a little bit more narrowly, technically, we want to have this be subject to hazama, maybe to scare the aid, make him take things more seriously. But the Beis Halevi explains it more fundamentally, that drisha v'chakira is a shear in the quality of the eidos. And really, eidos ati yachal azima is a shear in the quality of the eidos. That if something is so vague, then it's not good eidos. Meaning if something's so vague that's not able to be mazin by mazimim, so then that reflects the fact that your eidos is probably pretty weak if it's so vague. So drisha v'chakira in general reflects the quality of the eidos. But the whole point, as we're saying for Rav Chaim, is that the din shtar is a chafzah shel eidos with the Baal HaShtar's like plausible narrative being plugged in to this piece of paper in this shtar. And the whole chiddush is that he has a license to do that with kind of like this automatic believability, assuming that, you know, it's plausible. You have like something logical, something compelling, is like an umdira. But the point is that that's the chiddush of shtar, that he has this license to be believed with whatever plausible narrative he wants to plug in, whatever it says in the shtar. And it doesn't have the component of classic Eidos given by a Gavre Eidim, who would be subject to this requirement of Jewish Shabbat Kiyum. Okay. And then finally, this whole idea of the blank check, saying that the Baal HaShtar could just read in a plausible narrative into the Shtar. So how far does that go? Certainly on a basic level, we trust this narrative, we trust the narrative that's actually written in ink in the Shtar. Namely, we trust that this Shtar, was written by Kashrus, it's not Mezuyaf, the Eidim signed on it are Kasher, the Maisa actually happened. But what about beyond that? Are there applications of where we say that the narrative could be read in to tell us things beyond the core story of the Shtar itself? So we have a few applications. And I'll, just for time purposes, I'll just mention one of them. The main one that we brought up a few times. So, and again, I wrote it down in the outline. And if you want to speak to me about it, like any questions on it, I'm happy to speak about it afterwards. But I think the main application that Rav Chaim himself talks about in the Chibor, and an application that we spoke about a few times, is Minoy Shliach. The Rambam in Hilchos Ishus, Parakim Alachat HaSvav, is Mechadish, something about Minoy Shliach. So the question is, in general, we know that you probably need to have Eidei Kiyum when it comes to, the Gemara seems to say that you need Eidei Kiyum when it comes to Kedushin. So let's say at a minimum that means you need Eidim to be present when the Kedushin happens. Meaning, even if we know that the Kedushin took place through, let's say, Hodas Baal Din, you still need to have Eidim there to be Mekayim it as a presence to watch the ring being put on her finger, the star being given over. You need Eidei Kiyum as a presence. At a minimum. They might need to do more than that, but at a minimum, you need Eidei Kiyum as a presence. So that's for sure true for the Maisa Kedushin. The question is, let's say a Baal appoints a Shliach to do the Maisa Kedushin for him, towards the woman. So does that appointing of the Shliach itself need an additional set of Eidim to be Mekayim? Do you need Eidei Kiyum for the Minoy Shlichos itself? All seem to agree that if you're appointing a Shliach LeKabbalah, so let's say the woman is appointing a Shliach to receive the Shtar Kedushin for herself, all seem to agree that, at least by all, I mean the Rambam and the Ravid doesn't argue. I don't know what all the Rishonim say. But at least the Rambam and the Ravid seem to agree that for Shliach LeKabbalah and Kedushin, you do need Eidei Kiyum, an extra set of Eidei Kiyum. But when it comes to Shliach LeHolacha, for the Baal to appoint a Shliach to send the Shtar Kedushin to the woman, does that mean our Shliach need Eidei Kiyum? So that is subject to a Machlokas Rambam and Ravid. The Rambam says you don't need Eidei Kiyum there for the Minei Shliach. The Haraya, we don't need Eidei Kiyum when it comes to the Minei Shliach for Shliach LaHolacha. In Gerushin, the Baal can just appoint the Shliach to send the get to his wife. And for sure, it's clear from the Gemara that you do not need Eidei Kiyum on that Minei Shlichos. So too, Huadin LeKedushin, you don't need Eidei Kiyum for the Minei Shliach. Argues the Ravid, it's a terrible Raya. Because that's not what's going on in Gittin. It's not that in Gittin we say that the Baal can get away with Minoy Shliach LaHolacha without Eidei Kiyum. No, it's not that in Gittin we don't need it. It's that we already have it. It's for you. It's not that we don't need Minoy Shliach, right? It's that you do need Minoy Shliach, but says the Ravid, you have it when it comes to Gittin. How? We don't know factually that there are Eidei Kiyum watching the Baal appoint a Shliach. Says the Ravid, Gito Mochiach Alav. You look inside the words of the get, and the words inside the get tell us that not only did the Maisa Gerushin happen, but it also happened with seemingly some testimony with presence over the Minoy Shliach LaHolacha. And the obvious question is, that's not true. If you look at the words of the get, the story that's being told in the get, Hariyam Megoresh Esli, it says nothing about the fact that a Shliach was appointed to send this get to the woman. So what does the Ravid mean, Gito Mochiach Alav? That we have Eidei Kiyum built in. So that's how Rav Chaim proved that this idea of like the plausible narrative in the Shtar, this Din Shtar, the fact that we trust, like the certain story being plugged into the Shtar by the Baal, that extends far beyond just the story that's told in the Shtar itself, the words that are on the piece of paper. They extend even beyond that. So long as it's plausible, they expand even beyond that. While the Rambam argues, at least with that application, doesn't mean the Rambam argues on the Yesod of Shtar, Chas v'Chalila. It just means that maybe that application the Rambam thought was too far. But when it comes to a couple of other applications, which I'm not going to get into now because they're like very involved, But let's say the Rambam, when it comes to Osios Nikneis B'Mesira, which we quoted from the Rav, and the Rambam, when he talks about Eid Echad Al Ashtar Halva, so it's clear that the Rambam does have his own applications of how we extend the concept of Din Shtar to like the plausible narrative to other cases. But at least when it comes to this application, he holds that it's more limiting. The Ravid, on the other hand, clearly is comfortable expanding it, and it's because of this idea, says Rav Chaim, that it's a Din Shtar, and it goes beyond just what the Gavra Edim themselves signed off on. It also has the ability to testify about things that go beyond the core story of the Shtar. Okay, and with that, we conclude. And yes, we didn't talk so much about the Baal HaMor and Hazama, and also we're going to get in Shir, hopefully, to the Shita of the Rif and the Ri more in depth. So I guess we'll pick up with that. We'll pick up with that in the next Lazar Shir. Okay, Shkoyach, guys.